booster for your morning. All the news you need to know. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Good morning, everyone. Frank is off for the day. He'll be back tomorrow, and I'm sure he's having a grand old time listening to that David Duchovny song, which is now going to be in my head for the rest of the day. That's okay with Molly, though, right? Because you like David Duchovny. He's your man. Molly, are you there? Molly, you always have to have the microphone turned on. All right, we'll get back to her in a second. But before we do that, Molly, let me know when you're there. But before we talk to Molly, let me just give you what's going on with the weather. I have to tell you, out on Long Island, yesterday was really, really nice day. I don't know what it was like in the city by the afternoon, but certainly a really pretty day yesterday. Was a little bit on the warm side, but not too bad. Today in New York City, we're looking at a high of 82. It should be really nice. Sunny day with low humidity, light winds. I mean, it sounds pretty much perfect. Tonight, we're going to have clear skies and a low of 69. As we head into Wednesday, we'll have partly cloudy skies in the morning with afternoon showers, maybe thunderstorms, and they may contain strong gusty winds. So keep an eye out for that. So it looks like tomorrow it starts off okay, but then it kind of goes downhill. Those thunderstorms continue through Wednesday night and into Thursday morning. We should have some showers wrapping up. And then just clouds in the afternoon on Thursday. But by Friday and Saturday, it looks really, really nice. Mid to upper 70s and lots of sun. Humidity doesn't look too bad. We're looking at probably, let's see what, just about 53%. So that's not so bad. So all in all, the weekend looks really nice. If we can just get through after today, the next couple of days. And that is your Ramsey Mazda Weather Center weather forecast. And before we get to, I believe Joe Nolan is back today, but before we get to that, we do have some news to talk about, and I want to get to some of the big stories today that we're going to be talking about. This is one that I hope is going to help the economy, not hurt it. Let's start off with news about your wallet. If your bank balance starts to look maybe a little leaner, it's probably not a mistake. Four different COVID unemployment benefits expired yesterday, Monday, 18 months after the start of the pandemic. Among the perks that have gone bye-bye is the $300 per week boost to people claiming regular unemployment. On the bright side here, restaurateurs are hoping that the end of these enhanced benefits will get people off their lazy boys and back to work. Restaurant owners in particular have been really vocal and complaining about having a tough time getting their staff to come back, given the fact that some continue to make more money by just not working. And money seemingly wasn't the issue Monday morning near JFK. Authorities say a guy sitting in his car was shot dead. It happened near South Conduit Avenue and 132nd Street around 8 a.m. Cops say the suspect just walked up to the unidentified victim, shot him once in the head. New York Post reporting there is video of this attack. The gunman took off in a white Nissan, and the victim was pronounced dead at the scene. Meantime, before we get to Joe Nolan, just about 4 hours earlier, a 25-year-old man was shot in the back during some sort of fracas on Atlantic Avenue and 129th Street in Richmond Hill. He is reportedly stable at Jamaica Hospital. And speaking of stable, unless he's totally unstable, what are we talking about? Joe Nolan is joining us. How are you?
I'm good.
Welcome back from vacay.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good to get away.
I have to say, we were really raving about you and how you came back after Hurricane Ida, and just, you know, you were a real team player, and we appreciate that.
Well, you know what? You have to. When something like that happens, you have to come back. Sorry for that jump. I don't know what just happened there.
That's okay.
Sometimes you just have to do things. I mean, you know, you've been on TV and radio for so long, too, is that it's just part of your life. And when something happens, you have to be on the radio. You know?
Oh, that's so true. I mean, even today, you know, not being on television now for like 5 years, when I see some of my colleagues out there, you know, covering up the streets, it's like, gets me crazy. I know the feeling. Yeah, you definitely want to be there on the front lines.
Yep. So here we go. Bell Parkway westbound, Bay 8th Street. Bad accident. That's in the process of being cleared up and out of the way. Now, if you're on 287 northbound, the ramp to eastbound 78, all lanes are closed with an accident investigation. Now, in Kearney, we still have flooding there on 508. A lot of roads are still closed in Bridgewater, Brown Brook, Franklin Township in New Jersey, mainly. And then also the Raritan Valley line of New Jersey Transit. It is back, running normally. However, they are there bypassing Bridgewater. And I don't know, Julia, if you saw the pictures of TD Bank Ballpark that was completely filled with water.
Yeah.
Well, the Bridgewater train station is right there.
Ugh.
So as a result of that, they still, with the damage, they can't get to that train station. And alternate side of the street parking rules and regulations, once again today, are going to be suspended. This support of service to Discover. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year. It's amazing because Discover's accepted at 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. Learn more, discover.com/yes. I'm Joe Nolan, traffic on the 7s, Talk Radio 77, WABC.
Joe, real quick, when I was driving home, I think it was Friday, I was on the LIE and I couldn't believe when I got into Queens how many cars were on the eastbound side but were facing, you know, off on the side, but they were facing westbound. I mean, just so many accidents and so many abandoned cars.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Oof,
it is. Man, when I came up from the shore yesterday and I went over to the supermarket, as I'm driving over there, I go by all these poor people with their whole lives on out on the curb.
I know. My friend Christine Bichetti, her mom lost everything. She was in a basement apartment. It's just terrible.
Yep.
Real quick, were you a fan of the X-Files?
Yeah, kind of. Not in the beginning, but as it went along, I was, yeah.
What about The Wire or Boardwalk Empire?
No.
All right. Well, I know a lot of folks out there were. Actually, Molly, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Did you... good morning.
Good morning.
Did you... I know you're a fan of The X-Files. Did you ever watch The Wire or Boardwalk Empire? Matt, did you?
So, Boardwalk Empire, yes. The Wire... is my grandfather's favorite show.
It's one of the most brilliant shows.
It's on my list.
I absolutely love The Wire. Oh. I haven't seen The X-Files in like 10 years.
Well, we have, I mean, Deb mentioned it at the top of the show, but some incredibly tragic news for fans of that show, The Wire, and also Boardwalk Empire, among other shows and films. Michael K. Williams, who, he played the gay gangbanger, Omar Little, on The Wire. And he did such a brilliant job. And that's actually when I became a huge fan of his, because he just stole every scene. Sadly, he was found dead Monday in his Brooklyn penthouse. The New York Post reporting the actor didn't make it to an event. Apparently, he was supposed to appear at on Saturday. Friends and family obviously started to worry. And that's when one of his relatives apparently made a call over to his apartment. Short time later, cops arrived. They found the star unresponsive. He was pronounced dead shortly after 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Williams was born and bred in Brooklyn. He was a Brooklyn boy. He was raised in the Vanderveer Projects there in Flatbush. He didn't start out as an actor, though. In fact, he reportedly worked for Pfizer, I think, just briefly. But then he left that job because he had this passion for dancing. And he actually got a job as a backup dancer, appearing in music videos and on tours with everyone from George Michael to Madonna. He actually, I believe he choreographed the Crystal Waters video, Pure Love. Anyway, he was known for his roles, as I said, on The Wire, and also for another brilliant turn on Boardwalk Empire as Chalky White, the character Chalky White. He was known for a scar that he had on his forehead that he actually got in a bar fight on his 25th birthday. I think it was in Brooklyn. It became somewhat of a trademark, I guess you could say, and even helped him land roles as mainly as thugs. Sadly, he had been open about his struggle with drugs, and it's believed that he died from a suspected heroin overdose. Now, I actually met him years ago. I was probably 5 or 6 years ago when he was over at Good Day New York appearing, and I don't know what he was promoting at that time. But I went up to him in the green room, and I said, I was an anchor at the time for the early news, and I just finished, and he was in the green room, and walked over to him, and I started talking to him. I just said, man, you killed it in The Wire. I just loved you in The Wire and blah, 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 blah. And we sat and talked for a long time, and we took pictures, and he was such a nice guy. And I really have to say, I don't know if his family or friends are going to be listening to this, but man, he was just a wonderful person who really impacted people. So very, very tragic loss. Michael K. Williams dead at the age of just 54. All right. Speaking of depressing, the United States has hit a very dark milestone over the weekend. More than 1,500 COVID deaths per day, the highest since March. Officials say more than 100,000 Americans are now in the hospital with the infection, and the number doubled in August compared to July. So from July to August, the number doubled. Florida, which is a state with a governor who has been very, very anti-mask and anti-vaccine passport, he is now leading the country. His state is now leading the country in deaths per 100,000 residents. And sadly, the news keeps getting more grim by the day. Experts say this weekend's massive travel stats mean that we are likely going to see a huge jump in both infections and deaths. And the Mu variant, which is this new strain, just the other day, there were reports that it was in a couple states. Well, now it is in every U.S. state. This is over the course of just a few days. It's now in every state except Nebraska. And I'm sure it's probably there by now after reading this. It's probably there now, too. And experts worry it could be even more contagious than the Delta variant and may be vaccine resistant. So we're going to keep an eye on that for you. Speaking of vaccines, the drama surrounding the shot is not limited to the United States. Oh, no, no. Up north yesterday, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was hit with gravel by a group of angry vaccine, anti-vaccine protesters at a campaign stop. He was apparently getting back on his bus in London, Ontario, when a group of angry guys started hurling insults. I guess there were girls there too, but I saw some men, you know, giving him the finger and so forth, and he gave them a thumbs up back, but I guess they didn't appreciate that, so they started grabbing pebbles, you know, and other stuff on the ground and just throwing it. He wasn't hurt. He was slightly alarmed, according to witnesses, but apparently some of the media covering the event were also pelted. Don't think they were hurt either. And you know what? It's 5:14. We're just a little inch away from the 5:15 mark where we do sports. So why don't we just jump into that? Because I do have a lot of on this day stuff. And I feel like I want to do some stories that we missed yesterday because, you know, a lot of people were probably not listening to the show yesterday because they were sleeping in, I would imagine. So what's happening in news, in sports?
Well, we got a good day. Well, actually, I should say a sorry day. Both teams lost. Carter Kaiboom and Andrew Stevenson hit RBI singles in the ninth inning off Edwin Diaz and the Washington Nationals. They rallied once again, edging the Mets 4-3 in the finale of a five-game series. The Nationals, who had lost eight of their last nine, were 1-for-14 with runners in scoring position prior to the ninth. Pete Alonso hit his 30th home run of the season for New York, which fell four games behind idle Atlanta in the NL East, a series marked by rallies that was decided by one final comeback. Staked to a 3-2 lead, Diaz walked two of the first three hitters he faced before Stevenson singled to right. Kaiboom then chopped a three-hopper up the middle against a drawn-in infield for the winning run. Now, for the Yankees, they fared worse than the Mets. Vladimir Guerrero hit his junior, I should say. He hit his 40th homer. Marcus Semien went deep twice, and the Blue Jays beat New York 8-0 for their fifth straight win. Hyunji Ryu pitched six effective innings as the Blue Jays won for their eighth time in nine games. Toronto also improved 5-2 in the Bronx for this year. Guerrero hit his 40th home run on Jameson Taillon's 13th pitch. The slugger and his Hall of Famer father joined Cecil and Prince Fielder as the second father-son duo to hit 40 homers. Guerrero finished with three hits, extending his hitting streak to a career-high 14 games. This report brought to you by Peerless Boilers. They do make America's best boilers. You can check them out at PeerlessBoilers.com. With sports at 15 and 45, I'm Matt Zappians of WABC Sports. Back to you, Juliet.
Thank you very much, Matthew. Let's head over to traffic on the 7s with Joseph Nolan. Hello, Joe.
I dropped my headphones. Hold on.
Oh, my gosh. You're just a hot mess out there.
There
you
we should, go.
Actually, you know what? I'm a hot mess. One of my veneers fell out, so I'm currently staring at myself in a mirror, which is at my computer. Why I have a mirror at my computer, there's a whole long story there. But I'm literally, I look like a hillbilly. I look like a hillbilly. I'm walking around. I kissed my husband goodbye this morning. He's like, I can't.
I just
please
can't
stop.
Do it.
It's so hideous.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
God, I know.
All right, here we go. Bell Parkway, westbound Bay 8th Street. Again, bad accident there with an accident investigation. Right in center lanes are going to be out of service. 287 northbound ramp to eastbound 78. All lanes are closed with that accident investigation, which continues. And again, a lot of those spots that had flooding yesterday, it continues. And you still have closures in places like Kearney and also in Bound Brook, Greenbrook, all that area. New Jersey Transit trains, Raritan Valley Line, bypassing Bridgewater. Other than that, though, everybody on or close to schedule. And alternates out of the street, parking rules are suspended. With traffic on the 7s, I'm Joe Nolan, Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Thank you very much. Is it bad to say hillbilly? Should I not be saying that?
I don't know.
Is that like, I mean, you know, I'm like Beverly Hillbillies. That kind
there
of
you
thing.
Go.
Yeah, okay. Oh, Lordy. Coming up, we are going to we're going to have on this day. I want to do a couple things from yesterday because I know a lot of you weren't listening. And there were some good ones from yesterday. Also, if you're planning on visiting my favorite city in the entire world for the day, I'm talking about Venice, Italy, you better bring some spare euro. And also, I've got some more of the quintessential fall foliage experience places to go. I'm starting with Europe. I'm going to be going around the world and ending up at the end of the week in New York City. Best places to look at fall foliage. We're going to start with the Loire River Valley. That's coming up at 5:40. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Entertaining and informative. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Thanks, Jim. Frank is off today. He'll be back tomorrow, and I am so excited for him to return. I'm happy that Matt is back and Molly's back as well. Deb was here with me yesterday. Have a little bit of biz buzz to report. Apparently, America's workforce is getting older and more diverse compared to what it was 40-ish years ago, which I guess isn't exactly a big shocker, but I guess maybe the older thing is. Federal labor economists looked at some federal labor data to see how much the nation's labor force has changed in recent decades. And this is according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics site. I failed Stat 31 in college twice. Apparently, the workforce is older, and the workforce is also more educated and has fewer married couples, which is interesting. In 1979, almost two-thirds of the U.S. labor force consisted of workers who were married. 40 years later, it was just 52%. So that's interesting. Also, the workforce, again, has become more diverse. Women are increasingly a major part of the workforce. However, women's progress in the labor market has been drastically altered during the COVID-19 pandemic, apparently. We were disproportionately affected as female-dominant industries suffered the biggest losses, and the bulk of the care responsibilities fell on women's shoulders as schools and child care centers closed, which is quite interesting. So that was your biz buzz for today. That's Frank's deal. I'd like to save that for him. I just wanted to bring you one story. But in the meantime, let's get back to some news. No idea if, do you like mollusks? Do you like bivalve mollusks, Molly?
I'm a fan of eating them, but I don't like it when people
just describe
call me mollusk.
I wasn't calling you mollusk. I said Molly, but did you think I called you mollusk?
Oh, no. I was making associations.
That's actually funny. Now it's going to be in my head, and I'll probably start calling you mollusk.
Well, I'd let you do it, Juliet. You're special.
Oh, that's true. I've heard that before. Well, no idea if Joe Nolan likes mollusks, bivalve mollusks. It really sounds unappetizing when you say it like that. But if he does, he's out of luck if he wants to partake in some at Grand Central. The famed Grand Central Oyster Bar will not be opening on time. It was supposed to have its grand reopening, you know, the post-pandemic reopening today after being shuttered for 17 months. But Hurricane Ida apparently waylaid those plans. So the new reopening date is in 2 weeks. That is according to the manager who spoke with the New York Post. And apparently the massive space, I think it's like 500 people or something like that. It's just huge, which is usually packed with tourists and locals. Just wasn't seeing much foot traffic over recent months. I mean, I can tell you just going through Penn Station all the time, it was like really quiet, except for all the crazies. Things are picking up now, though. So you and Justin Trudeau and Joe Nolan and Molly and you guys can all go. Anyone else who wants oysters can head over soon. It opens on September 20th. If you were sitting back in your lazy boy with a smirk, thinking about how happy you are that Governor Cuomo was pushing through that $2.1 billion AirTrain to LaGuardia project, well, don't be too smug. And by the way, I realize that nobody probably was sitting back smirking in their lazy boy over an AirTrain, but it's kind of a dull story, so I'm trying to zhuzh it up a bit. Transit advocates are reportedly trying to derail this air rail. As it stands, it would connect it would connect LaGuardia, okay, picture LaGuardia, to the LIR and the 7 train at Willits Point near Citi Field. Okay. Problem is, if you're coming from Manhattan, like a lot of people probably would be, you'd have to head east before connecting to the subway and heading back west. One official called it a big Cuomo ego boondoggle, comma, a zombie project that should be put to bed. And he and others are asking Governor Kathy Hochul to put it to bed by putting the nail in the coffin. And some breaking news, the Human Rights Campaign, speaking of Governor Cuomo, former Governor Cuomo, the Human Rights Campaign, which is the biggest LGBTQ advocacy group in the country, has canned its president. Alfonso David got the heave-ho after officials said that he violated his contract. He recently was in the hot seat, the scorching hot seat, after helping former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo deal with the fallout from sexual harassment claims. Now, why would the head of the Human Rights Campaign be helping a governor deal with a sex scandal? Well, good question, and I believe I have the answer. Perhaps it's because this Alfonso David guy was at one time counsel to former Governor Cuomo before being appointed the HRC's president in 2019. So apparently they still had a connection, and that was a violation. So he is out. Talking about some more national news now, President Biden continues to get skewered. His approval ratings are tanking, not just by Republicans he's getting skewered, but by our allies as well. Former British Prime Minister Tony Blair defended his decision to join the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan back in 2001. And he says he thinks it's crucial that we all, meaning Western allies, continue to stand up for liberal values around the world. But he blasted the president's withdrawal of the country during a speech on Monday, saying it suggests that the United States under Joe Biden has a, quote, limited appetite for war. And he says that could very well give our enemies a belief that the time is over for the Western powers. Also, British broadcasting bad boy, I like that, that's his name. That's the name that I gave him. Piers Morgan skewered the president, Biden, in a piece for the Daily Mail on Monday. He says the pullout makes America look weak, spineless, cowardly, and disloyal. And speaking of weak, spineless, cowardly, and disloyal, none of those qualities apply to our traffic guy with traffic on the sudden, Joe Nolan. Are you a bivalve mollusk person? Ugh, that just makes me sick even thinking about it described that way.
Oh, man, that's rough.
Gross.
Anyway, Bell Parkway westbound, Bay 8th Street, bad accident with an accident investigation. They're working on that. The right and center lanes are going to be out coming up to that. And in New Jersey, another accident investigation. This one on 287 northbound, the ramp to eastbound 78. There's closure there. Now, also, there's a lot of local closures still. Bridgewater, Bound Brook, South Bound Brook, Lodi, up around Pine Brook, those places. So just be aware of that if you're traveling locally. Also now, a change with Metro North on the Hudson Line. They're going to run service every half hour during the peak and hourly off peak against storm damage, and the Raritan Valley Line of New Jersey Transit bypassing Bridgewater and alternate side of the street. Parking rules and regulations again today are going to be suspended. I'm Joe Nolan, traffic on the sevens, Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Thank you, sir. My series continues on the best places to go in Europe for fall foliage. Today we're focusing on France, Germany, Italy, and Belgium. That is coming up after Deb's headlines, which are coming up right now.
Good morning. I'm Deborah Valentine. Labor Day tragedy. A 6-year-old girl died in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, during what's described as an incident on the Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park haunted mine drop ride. An investigation is underway. New York Republican Congressman Lee Zeldin joined Fox Report with John Scott to react to the damage done in New York City by the remnants of Hurricane Ida. Zeldin says the city was underprepared.
New York City was caught off guard. The leadership was caught off guard. There wasn't enough advanced warning.
14 people died in New York City, most in those illegal basement apartments. Zeldin, of course, running for governor of New York. President Biden visits hard-hit Queens and Manville, New Jersey today in the aftermath of Ida. Meanwhile, disaster declarations from the feds have been approved for portions of New York and New Jersey ahead of the president's visit. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy says, well, a major disaster declaration has been approved in several counties. In the Garden State, he will work to get more added.
The president accepted our request for a major disaster declaration in 6 New Jersey counties.
And the governor was in Lambertville, New Jersey yesterday, touring flood damage, at least 50 deaths nationwide blamed on the storms in the Northeast. That's your 77-second WABC News update. Juliet will have your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Right now we have a reading of 63 degrees, clear skies. I'm Deborah Valentine.
Entertaining and informative. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Good morning, everyone. Frank is off today. He'll be back tomorrow, and I am here for you. And I want to start off with on this day. But so today is September 7th. But actually, before we get to today, let me tell you what you missed yesterday. There was a lot of stuff that you missed yesterday, but on the day before September 7th, 1995, and I had mentioned this, I think Deb and I were talking about this, my hero, Cal Ripken from the Baltimore Orioles, Cal Ripken Jr., breaks Lou Gehrig's record of most games played straight, 21-31. It was such a momentous day. That happened on this day, well, September 6th, just in case you happen to be sleeping yesterday morning, sleeping in, dealing with your Labor Day fun from the day before. Also on this day before 1997, so September 6th, 1997, this was a day I will never forget. The funeral for Princess Diana is held at Westminster Abbey in London. Diana had died, of course, in a horrific car accident on August 31st. The funeral started at 9:08, actually, London time, when the Abbey's bell rang, signaling the cortege had left Diana's home, Kensington Palace. 2,000 people attended the ceremony, and an estimated 2.5 billion people worldwide watched it, making it still one of the biggest ever televised events in history. The iconic scenes of Princes William and Harry walking with their heads down. I mean, that was, you know, some of the most poignant of the day, obviously. But for me, it's always going to be that first time the pool camera zoomed in on the card that was left on her coffin as it was going through, you know, going through the funeral cortege, reading Mummy. It was a letter written by Prince Harry to his mom. All right. Now, on this actual day, September 7th, 1497, I remember it like it was yesterday, Perkin Warbeck arrives in Cornwall, England, the UK, to proclaim himself the true heir to the throne. He claimed to be one of the famed, remember the princes of the Tower, the two brothers who were the sons of Edward IV, and they were locked away by their uncle, Richard III, after Edward died, because Richard wanted to basically be king, and they just mysteriously never showed up again. Well, Warbeck was pretending to be the younger of the two princes, and he rallied forces in Cornwall, England, against King Henry VII, who had beaten Richard at the Battle of Bosworth and was now king. 2 years later, after trying unsuccessfully to escape from the Tower of London, Perkin Warbeck is beheaded on Tower Hill. And on this day, September 7th, 1630, 3 months after landing in Salem, Massachusetts, John Winthrop and a group of Puritans from England settled in a new location, and they named it after a town in the English county of Lincolnshire. That city today we know as Boston. In 1812, on this day, Napoleon Bonaparte won a victory against the Russian army, but because there were so many deaths on both sides, the battle ultimately broke Napoleon's forces. As they trudged toward Moscow, they kept dying of dysentery and all sorts of things. Both sides, suffered massive losses, but the Russians had reserve troops, and they were in Russia, and the French didn't. And in 1813, on this day, a meat packer from Troy, New York, named Sam Wilson, stamps barrels of beef to the U.S. Army during the War of 1812, and he stamps them with the letters U.S. Soldiers reportedly start referring to the food as Uncle Sam's. You know, it was Sam Wilson's little branding, and U.S. Uncle Sam. The local paper picked it up, and the rest is history. One note, by the way, in the 1860s, I believe it was, a political cartoonist created the image of Uncle Sam that we know today. The German-born Thomas Nast is also supposedly the guy who came up with the modern image of Santa, the donkey for the Democrats, and the elephant for Republicans. Even today, Troy, New York refers to itself as the home of Uncle Sam. And in 1907, on this day, the ocean liner RMS Lusitania starts her maiden voyage from Liverpool heading to New York City. 8 years later, on May 7th, 1915, as it's heading back towards Liverpool, a German U-boat torpedoes her and sinks her, killing nearly 1,200 passengers and crew. Most were British, but there were also many notable Canadians and also Americans, including politicians and artists and socialites, including Alfred Gwynne Vanderbilt, who was this grandson, I believe, of Cornelius Vanderbilt. He was Cornelius Vanderbilt II's son, so that would be Cornelius Vanderbilt I's grandson. And on 1914, on this day, September 7th, that beautiful structure once known as the General Post Office Building over there on 8th Avenue opens. It was designed by the iconic firm McKim, Mead, and White. Those were the architects who designed the old Penn Station, among a million other things. This is interesting. I didn't know this. The Corinthian colonnade that faces 8th Avenue, you know, that you can still see obviously today, is actually the largest in the world. It expands several times over the whole post office itself expanded several times over the decades, and it soon started to fade like a clinging, aging Hollywood starlet. But recently, as you know, it went through a renaissance, and it's now the Moynihan Train Hall for Amtrak and LARRR riders. And happy birthday to Queen, well, she was Queen, Elizabeth I, not this current queen, but Elizabeth I. She was Queen of England and Ireland. She was born in 1533 at Placentia Palace. She is, of course, the daughter of Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn. She ruled from 1558 till her death in 1603, and she was the last ruler of the Tudor dynasty. Also, on this day, 1996, approximately 11:15 p.m. local time, the rapper Tupac Shakur is ambushed while riding in a black BMW with Suge Knight after the, I think it was the Seldon-Tyson boxing match, if I'm not mistaken, at the MGM Grand Hotel in Vegas. A white late-model Cadillac sedan pulled up to the passenger side of Shakur's car, and gunshots rang out. Shakur was hit four times, twice in the chest, died six days later from internal bleeding. Members of his band, the Outlaws, this is interesting, reportedly smoked some of his body's ashes after mixing them with weed. Lovely. East Coast rapper Notorious B.I.G. was eyed in the shooting. He was killed 6 months later in a drive-by in L.A. And finally, happy birthday to one of the greatest of all time, Chrissy Hynde of The Pretenders. She's turning 69 today. And that is on this day. And we have an on this day, which is going to be the traffic report, coming out right now with Traffic on the Sevens and Joseph Nolan. Did that entice you? Did that interest you at all?
Oh, I loved it.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite part of the day. You know how long I spend on these things? Oh, I write them down. I do all my little research.
Yeah,
I love it.
Time.
Oh, I love it. And everybody else does too. Remember we took the Twitter 80% poll?
80%, right?
Yeah, well, mostly.
Well.
It was overwhelmingly supportive.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, Belt Parkway westbound at Bay 8th Street. Pretty bad accident here. It's in the process of being cleared up and out of the way. Southern State, the South Oyster Bay Road, unauthorized truck. That's off the roadway. 287 northbound, the ramp to 78. All lanes are closed with an accident investigation. Again, Jersey Transit, Raritan Valley Line bypassing Bridgewater. Metro North on the Hudson Line. Again, service every half hour. And alternate side is suspended. I'm Joe Nolan with traffic on Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Matt Sapienza, what was today? Today is National Something Day?
You know those, like, national, like, days, like, you know, National Dog Day, National Cat Day?
Yeah.
I found this out for today. Okay, so here, we have a couple for today. National Beer Lovers Day is today.
Okay, we like that.
We got National Acorn Squash Day. National Salami
Wait, National
Day.
Acorn Squash Day?
Yeah.
It's like National Turnip Day. I mean,
I know.
Is there a need for, I don't know, maybe it's a farmer's.
Who actually celebrates acorn squash? And National, it's appropriate because today's forecast is calling for it. Neither Rain Nor Snow Day.
Oh, God. When is it going to be National Juliet Day? That's all I care about.
Every day is National Juliet Day.
Before we get to more of Juliet, let me just get over to the BizBuzz, because I do have something for you, and it's a little bit travel related. Because of what's going on with the airlines and flying over to places that they can't fly at this point, that Americans aren't allowed, like, well, I'm going to tell you a couple of the places. Amsterdam, if you happen to miss the show yesterday, you can't fly to the Netherlands. Sweden is banning Americans. It's kind of a bummer. You can fly to the Netherlands. See, I'm telling you, this missing veneer is killing me. You can fly over there, but you have to be vaccinated. You can't be unvaccinated. You have to be vaccinated, and even if you are, you still have to go to quarantine for 10 days. So really, who's going to do that? But because of the fact that some of these EU countries are saying, no, you are not coming in, Americans, the airlines, both here and in Europe, are making adjustments and cancellations. obviously, the more countries that decide that we're not allowed in, the more cancellations we're going to be seeing. That's what the Netherlands did last week. Like I said, Amsterdam, you can't visit there. It's such a bummer. KLM, within just a day of the Netherlands announcing that Americans were essentially banned, KLM, which is the national carrier of the Netherlands, issued a statement saying that it is a big step backwards, but they're going to have to cancel some of their service from Orlando or to Orlando to Miami to Vegas and things like that. American, Delta, and United also fly multiple daily flights to Amsterdam. They haven't yet announced any schedule changes or cancellations, but it's probably likely that they will. So if you are planning on going over to Europe and you're starting, you know, you're maybe just having a layover or something in Amsterdam, just check out your ticket. Make sure you call your airline just to make sure that you've got a flight. All right. I think that's a good segue into your Jet Set Juliet travel update for today. Shall we get to that? That was pretty much the breaking news for you, so let's just move on. If you're planning on visiting my favorite city in the entire world, like I said, for the day, Venice, Italy, you better bring some spare euros. Hoping to preserve the fragile ecosystem and cut down on the mobs of day trippers, Venice is going to start charging entry fees. The price is going to range from about, it depends on the time of the year. So it'll range from like maybe $3.50 to $11.80 per person. Again, depending on the season. Seems like it might be a bit hard to regulate every visitor, but those coming in via train, car, or bus will likely have to go through some sort of, I don't know, turnstile at different entry points. Unfortunately, travelers who have booked rooms overnight, however, are exempt. The new plan kicks in during the second half of 2022. So they've got to get, you know, have some time to get their act together, I guess. Moving on, in day two of my week-long series on the absolute best places for a quintessential fall foliage experience, we're going to continue with Europe. And I had Europe yesterday, some places in Europe yesterday, and I'm finishing with Europe today. Then we're going to move on around the world until we end up on Friday in New York. But let's essentially continue with Europe, which has some of the most beautiful cities and villages on the planet. And obviously, some of those villages and cities have incredible parks and forests and places to see. I know some of these places may not be in your reach right now, but I hope they will inform and inspire you. Let's start in France in the Loire River Valley. Speaking of kings and queens, I love my kings and queens. This is a one-stop shop for fall foliage. Gorgeous royal chateaus, noble manors, and vineyards. I mean, if you want to blow people's minds, visit the Chateau du Chambord during the fall. When I think of jaw-dropping and heart-stopping Instagram backdrops, this is the place that immediately pops into my mind. It was built for Francis I. I mean, it is just the most massive palace, just so gorgeous. It wasn't actually his summer getaway or even his main palace. It was his royal hunting lodge, but it seriously is the most gorgeous palace, I think, in the entire world. The grounds, however, that enclose the chateau make up the largest walled game reserve on the continent, which means no matter where you look, you're going to be surrounded by stunning flora and fauna like oak and pine trees. Plus, you got deer, you have wild boar, and 150 different species of bird. And the trees are just absolutely beautiful in the fall, so I highly suggest visiting the Chateau du Chambord in the Loire River Valley. Moving on, Germany. The country has a cornucopia of stunning places to see the leaves change, but if I had to narrow it down, I would say the Black Forest. This area of Germany, which borders France, is so picture perfect. You can fly to Frankfurt and take a roughly like a 2-hour drive down, maybe less, stopping in fairy tale like medieval towns like Heidelberg and Mannheim for tours of old castles, or Baden-Baden, Germany's most famous spa town. But once you're done, close out the afternoon with a walk among the dense evergreen forest of the Black Forest, where you literally will feel like you've just walked into a Grimm Brothers storybook. Munich and Berlin are amazing, and there are some gorgeous parks there. But if you're really looking for the classic German experience, I would suggest skipping the big cities and hitting the small villages dotting the Black Forest. Now, there is a massive forest in the Romagna-Tuscany area of Italy. It's just about an hour and a half's drive east from Florence. It's called Casentinesi Park. And just like Florence, it's an open-air museum. featuring ancient streams and waterfalls winding their way through an abundance of ash and dogwood and maple trees and other rich woodlands. This is a great day trip from Florence, or really from any of the cities that, you know, in that area, in the Tuscany Romagna area. It'll really give you a dose of like the peace and the tranquility that I think a lot of people kind of need when we travel to Europe, because sometimes we're so busy seeing the museums and all that stuff. So we just need a little bit of a break. If you do visit, make sure you stop by the ancient monastery of Camaldoli, which is along the banks of the Camaldoli River. The place dates back to the thousands when a Benedictine monk named Saint Romualdo decided to set up shop there. It's a popular pilgrimage site today, and you can visit the antique pharmacy there on site to buy everything from ancient ointments to jams from the monks who still live there. And finally, Bruges, Belgium. It might be the perfect place to celebrate the turn of the season. And by celebrate, I mean head to the many pubs for a proper Belgian beer. Every September, the city hosts a beer weekend in Bruges, where you'll find dozens of brewers showcasing their finest brews. After you partake, safely of course, walk off the calories and the buzz by wandering through the medieval waterways. They do call Bruges the Venice of Belgium for a reason. The leaves there, they turn this kind of bright crimson. I mean, literally, it matches the paint on the outside of some of the historic homes that line the canals that wind through the city center. This is a town where you're going to meld in with the locals. Tourists are pretty much gone by the fall, so you'll have some of the streets, as far as outsiders go, to yourself. It's a great place to live like a local, which is, if you listen to my Jet Set Juliet's, you know that is my number one rule and piece of guidance when traveling. And that is your Jet Set Juliet travel update for today. Let's head over right now to Mr. Sapienza for sports. What's up, Matt?
Oh, we got a terrible day for baseball, Juliet. Carter Kiboom and Andrew Stevenson hit RBI singles in the ninth inning off Edwin Diaz, and the Washington Nationals rallied once again, edging the Mets to a 4-3 loss in the finale of a five-game series. The Nationals, who had lost 8 of their last 9, were 1-for-14 with runners in scoring position prior to the ninth. Pete Alonso hit his 30th home run of the season for New York, which fell 4 games behind idle Atlanta in the NL East. A series marked by rallies was decided on one final comeback. Staked by a 3-2 lead, Diaz walked 2 of the first 3 hitters he faced before Stevenson singled to right. Kiboom then chopped a 3-hopper up to the middle against a drawn-in infield for the winning run. Over for the Yankees, things weren't looking so good either. In fact, a little bit worse. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit his 40th homer. Marcus Semien went deep twice. And the Blue Jays beat the Yankees 8-0 for their 5th straight win. Hyun-Jin Ryu pitched 6 effective innings as the Blue Jays won for their 8th time in 9 games. Toronto also improved 5-2 in the Bronx this year. Guerrero hit his 40th homer on Jameson Taillon's 13th pitch. And the slugger and his Hall of Fame father joined Cecil and Prince Fielder as the second father-son duo to hit 40 homers. Guerrero finished the game with 3 hits and extending his hitting streak to a career-high 14 games. It's going to be a while before he hits DiMaggio's streak. That's your sports update brought to you by Peerless Spoilers. I almost said 77 seconds. I'm still on the weekend vibe when I did that on the weekends. But that was your sports report brought to you by Peerless Boilers. They do make America's best boilers, believe me. You can check them out at peerlessboilers.com. With sports at 15:45, I'm Matt Sapienza, WABC Sports. Back to you, Juliet.
All right, thanks, Matt. Let's head over to traffic on the 7s with Joe Nolan. Hey, Joe.
All right, and we continue to have problems on the westbound Belt Parkway, Bay 8th Street again. That bad accident, that continues. Also, we're looking at a lot of slow traffic as you start to travel out onto the westbound side of the Southern State coming into the Seaford Oyster Bay with an unauthorized truck off on the side of the roadway. 287 in New Jersey northbound, the ramp to 78 going to be closed with that accident investigation. Jersey Transit again still bypassing Bridgewater. And alternate side again today is going to be in effect. I'm Joe Nolan with traffic on Talk Radio 77 WABC.
All right, we have an update on a strange story. It sounds like a Southern Gothic horror story out of South Carolina. That's coming up.
Entertaining and informative. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Thank you, Mr. Announcer. Frank is off. He'll be back tomorrow. And I wanted to do a couple follow-ups on some stories that hit over the weekend. This, the one that we're going to start out with is a just an awful story. The Marine sharpshooter who randomly blasted away a couple, their three-month-old baby, the baby's grandmother, and a family dog, appeared in a Florida courtroom today, yesterday. Brian Riley is charged with 17 counts, and he was denied bond. TV crews caught him during his perp walk wearing a white hazmat suit, hands cuffed with his eyes closed, ignoring reporters' questions. Police say the 33-year-old may have been suffering from PTSD, that is according to his girlfriend, when he headed over seemingly for no reason at all, completely randomly, to this family's home in Lakeland, Florida, Sunday afternoon and began shooting. Riley engaged police briefly, then surrendered. The Polk County Sheriff ripped into the suspect during a press conference Sunday, calling him a coward for surrendering to police unarmed, which of course meant that they could not shoot him. An update on the strange story out of South Carolina. This is, this is a weird one. The New York Times reported over the weekend that attorney Alex Murdaugh, who was part of a legal dynasty down in Charleston, like a 100-year-old legal dynasty, has resigned from his law firm after he learned he was being investigated for the misappropriation of millions of dollars. This was apparently the day before he was allegedly shot in the head on a rural road. I don't know if you heard about this story, but lucky for him, this Alex Murdaugh, this attorney, the wound wasn't bad. It was just sort of a, grazing wound. Really lucky for him. The news, though, comes 3 months after Murdaugh's wife and son were shot dead at their hunting home outside of Charleston in what remains an unsolved double murder. On Monday, the 54-year-old Murdaugh announced that he was stepping down from the firm so he could, he said he could mourn his family and also get some help in rehab. The 54-year-old and his family were the subject of national headlines again when his wife Maggie was shot to death near the dog kennels on the grounds of that hunting lodge back on June 7th. Also gunned down was their 22-year-old son, Paul. Police are, of course, investigating. It's not clear if the attacks are related, but sure seems so. Well, at least it seems likely. So we'll keep you updated on that. I'm going to be following that story. It's really just very, very interesting. And another update on one of the stars of the January 6th, and I guess you could say a star. I mean, he kind of was. He was sort of a character, I guess you could say, of the January 6th riots. Jacob Chansley, otherwise known as the QAnon Shaman, made a deal with prosecutors. You probably heard this. He pled guilty to obstruction of justice, faces up to 5 years in prison. Now, his lawyer tried to explain the mindset of his client, comparing him to a love-struck teenager. This lawyer said that Chansley looked at former President Trump as a first love. So that was the mentality, I guess. That was the argument. The 33-year-old rioter was filmed by dozens of media outlets walking inside the Capitol building. You know this. He was wearing the horned headdress and no shirt and had all the tattoos and everything. He has been held without bond since the riot. The attorney, Watkins, Al Watkins, says that Chansley is no longer a Q conspiracy theorist, which means that he apparently does not believe that Democrats are part of a cabal of satanic pedophiles. So, Dems, you can relax a little bit more today because Jacob Chansley does not think that you are pedophiles and satanic. All right. Moving on to some other stories at 5:53. It's a story that unfortunately has been told by female reporters all too often, including myself. I actually went through one of these situations. There's a female sports reporter down in the South. She says she was violated by fans while she was filming a spot during the Clemson-Georgia showdown on Saturday. Her name's Lindsay Goff. She works down at WTOC in Georgia, and she posted a video on social media of some fans running into her shot, yelling, and allegedly touching her and her equipment as she stood holding the microphone in the concourse of the Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, it was a very, very busy area, that corridor, that concourse. But you can see her asking them not to touch her. She later tweeted, "After the first guy touched me, I started rolling. This isn't even all of it. Can we please respect people's space?" The video, of course, went viral, prompting, I guess, people who think groping women is okay, to mock and verbally abuse her, many telling her to find a new career. I have to honestly wonder how these guys would feel if it was their girlfriend or wife or sister out there receiving unwanted touching. Yeah, I was covering a Jacksonville Jaguars game and I was doing a live shot and some guy reached, you know, grabbed my butt and some other parts of me that were not appropriate. And I wanted to haul off and smack him in the head, but I held myself. But it is a situation that I've heard many, many times. I think for every single female that has done a live shot has been inappropriately touched at some point. So don't mock this girl. And let's do a couple celebrity stories now. Did you watch the Stanley Tucci travel show on CNN by chance? I liked it. I mean, I'm a huge Anthony Bourdain person, and I don't, you know, he's no Anthony Bourdain to me, but he did a nice job with the show, and he's quite charming. However, he just revealed that he has cancer. The actor gave an interview to a magazine and said that he had a tumor at the base of his tongue that was too large to operate on, and so they had to treat it with high-dose radiation and chemo. And this was a while back. He said it was rough because going into the treatment, he couldn't forget the experience his late wife went through when she was being treated for breast cancer. Kate Spath Tucci didn't make it. She died in 2009 at the age of just 47. And Tucci says that his situation got so bad that he was on a feeding tube for 6 months and almost didn't make it to his twins' graduation, but he ended up being okay. He says the whole experience left him feeling a lot older than he did, but he doesn't think the cancer is likely to come back. And one more quick story. This is such a sad story. You might have missed it because I know a lot of people were celebrating over the weekend, but one of the most beloved weathermen ever to grace our screens has passed away. You know Willard Scott. He gave us the temperatures on the Today Show for years.
He passed, so heartbroken.
Yeah, I know. Passed away Saturday morning. Almost immediately, his former colleagues, including Katie Couric, Marie Shriver, Andrea Mitchell, so many others posted online honors. His close friend and protege, Al Roker, paid tribute, calling him his second dad and the ultimate broadcaster. You know, Scott spent most of his career, actually, at NBC. He started out as, the prototypical page. In 1950, he was known, for being kind of wild and goofy, but very lovable. And what many folks didn't know was that he was actually the first person to portray Ronald McDonald, the Ronald McDonald character for the McDonald's TV commercials. So I didn't know that. Scott was 87 years old.